Welcome to the Middle Church Podcast, a multicultural, multi-ethnic, intergenerational movement of spirit and justice, powered by revolutionary love with room for everyone. No matter where you are, how you look, or who you love, we pray this podcast will help you on your journey. Here's this week's sermon.
I pulled this piece of a text out of the middle of a text, so these contexts can be difficult to grasp. But if we're listening to this text, we get the sense that the community to whom Amos is speaking is fed up. They're looking for the day of the Lord to come. They're looking for the end times to come. They're thinking things are really tough, but when the end times come, there will be a reset, a start over, a refresh button, like when your power goes out in the computer's crazy town. They're thinking that they want the new beginning that they expect to come after an apocalypse. Are you with me? So I can only imagine. I mean, this is pre-exile. We don't know which one of these times in history for sure is the Jewish difficulty, but it is one such a time. And Amos is speaking to a fed-up people who think something is amiss. There's civil unrest. There's centuries-long tensions around belonging and nation-state. There's struggles about land and power underneath the surface of conversations about religion and chosenness. As was then, is now. You feel me? They were desperate. These are not new desperations for our Jewish family. These are not new questions of concern about being annihilated or destroyed or identity causing you to be crushed to the ground. These are not new concerns for any of the people in the Middle East. In this particular context, these guys are desperate and yearning for the day of the Lord to come, the apocalypse, the end times, so the pain would stop, so the wars would cease, so Mother Earth would recover, so the guns would turn into plowshares, and they would study war no more. God, come. Won't you come? Won't you come now again soon? There's a Christian kind of apocalyptic working at hand in our politic right now. A kind of sense of stand back and watch and see. Let's see, because when the hell comes, the new day is coming. When it burns up, the new day is coming. When it goes to smithereens, the new thing is coming. There's a kind of wait and see apathy at work in Christian Zionism. Have you heard that expression? God is sovereign. All of these events are in God's hands. All of these things, paragraph 3, are by God's design. So therefore, just hang on. And when it is destroyed, we'll know God is coming back again. This is the kind of communication Amos is addressing in this text. What you think is going to happen isn't going to be light. What you think is going to happen is going to be darkness. What you think is going to happen is you're going to lean your hand on the wall and be like, whew, that was hard, but a snake is going to bite you, is the metaphor. Can you hear what I'm saying? Yeah. So what you think you want is for the pain to go away, and Amos is saying there's going to be a different kind of pain, as in we're always going to have trouble. But let's talk about apocalypse for just a second. Just a second. 1,140 dead. October 7. 132 hostages. For those people, for those families, the end has come. Are you with me? They are devastated and traumatized and angry and humiliated and frustrated and sad and grieving, a shiver that won't stop in the grief house. 132 hostages. 24,190 dead in Gaza. 9,600 of them children. For those people and for all the people in the global south, they are in trauma. They are devastated. That is the end time. Could it get any worse? Graves turned over by plows, hospitals bombed, schools bombed, churches bombed, people dead. Could it feel any more like the end of life as you know it than it is for these people? Are you with me? And for all of us who watch, no matter what our politics, no matter what we say out loud, no matter what we tweet or text, or we cannot without, we're human, we can't watch it and be okay. I'm not okay. Are you okay?
No.
I'm not okay. I'm not looking for the end times. My mama was alive, she'd be calling me every day right in here. Girl, is this the last day? Because look how crazy it is. That was mommy's favorite question. Are we there yet? God, I hope not. But that's just two places. Is anybody tracking the casualties in Ukraine? Is anybody tracking Sudan? 4,000 events of political violence, 13,000 dead in Sudan in the last few months. From November to now, 720 fatalities. We're not tracking. I can't track it all. Can you track it all? Your brain can't handle it. How about the 30-year war in the Congo? How about 6.3 million people, 6% of the population, fully displaced in the Congo? Who can track it all? I can't track it all. And let's come back home to our little neighborhood called the United States of America. When I say that, I want to put three K's in the K. What is wrong with us? What is wrong with our political leaders? What kind of discourse? Is it 92 individual indictments against Trump? I can't track the numbers. And we are imagining that that human being might be the... I'm sorry. Might be the nominee for the party. My dad was a Republican, so this is not an anti-Republican comment. It is a comment about what's our nation about. What are we about right now? Are you with me? What are we about? Who are we trying to be? The questions of identity and belonging and power and coalescing it to make the world we want, those are the existential questions plaguing the globe, and the answer, sadly, is a rising fascism that plays upon our fears. We want a big bad daddy to chase away the boogeyman and make us feel better. All the way across the globe, the same question: where is the power, the support systems? Who's in, who's out, who's being replaced, whose world is it? Who are we going to be as a global family? The question is not new. It's King Day. And he had some answers. First analysis: three threats against humankind. One being racism. The whole backdrop story of the United States of America is whites are better than everybody else. Our founding parents, fathers, didn't come here as Christians. They came mostly not as theists, but they came leaving their own oppression, seeking a land where they could be free, and they brought inside them the oppression that they had experienced, and then they oppressed the ones they found. Hurt people, oppress people, oppress people. Amen?
Amen.
So baked into the fabric of the nation is a white supremacist ideology that says land, whiteness, maleness, straightness, excuse me, now Christianness has all the power, is at the top of the caste, and everybody else is at the bottom. White people with black people down here, Jews somewhere in here. This is what Dr. King analyzed as the most catastrophic pillar of our society. And sadly, though Dr. King was killed in 1968, these last decades have not changed the race dynamic in America. Not nearly enough for it to make a difference. Black people make less money on the dollar than whites. There's a 21,000% wealth gap between black folks and white folks. Black women make less than any other female cohort in the nation. The fact is, race matters. Race absolutely matters. And Dr. King then, and I'm saying now, if we don't look directly at racism as the cancer that is killing us, we are going to keep having the same conversation over and over again. Race and race matters are a plague on our nation. And when we, you know, when I was a young preacher here 20 years ago, talking about Black Lives Matter, people were calling my board chair, Vicky, then and saying, why is Jackie always talking about race? And somebody said, because she's black. That's actually not the reason I was always talking about race. I was talking about race because race is everything. Race is housing patterns. Race is healthcare. Race is school districts. Race is voting rights. Race is pay. Race is, race is environment. Race is water systems. Race is longevity. Race is cellular. We are built on the fault lines of race. And here at Middle Church, we understand that this is the most important work for us to do, because when we dismantle the race thing, we're dismantling all the other things, right? So what are we doing about that? We are having a conference April 26 to 28 called Freedom Rising, You Move the World. Freedom Rising, You Move the World, where we're going to take on race and racism straight on the head. And I am hoping, for goodness sake, that you won't let King D be a day that we mourn how bad race is, but in fact, you sign up for the conference. Can you do that for my people? The second thing that King put on the table was materialism. He called it materialism, and I'm calling it, sorry, forgive me, capitalism. It's okay to snap and stay with me. I, you know, have on a Hugo Boss Macy's knockoff dress, okay? So I'm not a person who believes that we shouldn't be able to buy some goods and services. That's hypocritical to say. But I am saying what we call capitalism actually is a kind of hegemony in which white people, not white people like y'all, but white people. Nobody in this room, not anybody in this room, is the kind of white I'm talking about. Let me see. And if so, start giving me more money. No, I don't think so. The less than 1%, the people who drive everything, the ones who own everything, who dictate social media, who dictate pricing, who dictate global connections, that kind of white, is materialism gone crazy. It communicates to all of us in our feeds what it wants us to know, what it wants us to think about. I said the other day, I broke John's phone cord, and I said, John, oh my God, I don't know how I broke your phone cord, and Apple gave me phone cords to enjoy in my feed. The machine that is that kind of white is listening, watching, pulling strings, and I'm going to say pitting us against each other. right? That kind of machine does not want us to be in solidarity with each other. That kind of machine wants us to say, somehow, Jewish people and Palestinian people can't both have a homeland. That kind of machine wants us to think, if we're standing for Palestinians, we're anti-Semitic. That is a trope of whiteness that is a lie, but that is causing us to battle each other, right? It is disrupting the solidarity that we know we need and that we've curated. So what are we doing about that? Everything I'm complaining about, I'm trying to give us a solution, right? We have a program called Listen, Learn, and Lean into Peace. We're not catechizing you in these conversations, but we're trying to say, if you're thinking about whiteness as a trope, and we are, that has capitalistic tendencies and agendas, and it does, then come to these conversations and listen to other voices so you can hear what people really think. Not what you think they think. Not what you think they should think, but what people really think. Josh Stanton, Linda Sarsour, Christian Palestinians. Do you know that there are Christian Palestinians? There are Sikh and Buddhist Palestinians. We're trying to set a table so that we are not people only getting our news from MSNBC's perspective and Fox's perspective or the X or the Insta, but also just the news that comes because we're in relationship with other people and they tell us what they think. Are you guys with me? I'm talking fast, I'm feeling like we're long, and I want to try to get this all in. That's okay. Are you with me still? Right? Okay. So race, materialism, capitalism. Again, Jackie has a bank account. I have a house. I'm a little C capitalist, right, in that way. But I'm also absolutely believing that the Jesus who I follow wants us all to have enough. Socialism is Christian. So, you know, share their goods in common. You got some, I should have some. All God's children got a right to live and flourish and be okay. That's what I'm trying to say. And the white capitalist, again, not any of us are that rich, the white capitalist agenda wants us scrapping for scraps, wants us picking sides and teams, and wants us not flourishing as a human family. Are you with me? Okay. Third was militarism, right? And thank you, Laura. I read that. You know, many analyses now say Dr. King's assassination was more directly related to his stance against the Vietnam War than anything else. Because war, go back, war is about money. And war is about caste and race. War is about extracting from the land what you want. War is about a geopolitical look-see. I think I need those diamonds, thank you very much. War is about your political agenda, nation with an army, over someone else's. It's about them not having autonomy to manage themselves. War is business. And when he talked about the Vietnam War, Dr. King was saying, what's up with us bombing the smithereens out of poor brown people who don't really have anything? Well, they had something. The boundaries that shift and change because of war serve the other agenda I'm talking about, the white agenda, right? Which serves the race agenda. Can you see how they're all connected together? The militarism that Dr. King decried then, he had not yet seen. And he saw Pettus Memorial Bridge. He saw lunch counters. He had not yet seen what policing has come to do. I feel like I'm stepping on many toes, and I'm sorry. My cousin Donald was a police captain when he retired. We need police, but we need reform in our policing, because the policing is connected to the militarization, which is connected to the capitalism, which is connected to the race thing. So if you have your police being trained in military tactics. I was in Paris, I like being in Paris, with John. We took a train and we went down to the cathedral thingy down there, and it was a beautiful train, that place. We had a beautiful time, beautiful young people on the train. I love young people. They were this cute little, they dressed like our American kiddos, you know, whatever. They were just on the train, and a woman started walking through the train like, I was like, what's happening, right? So these young people evidently had gotten on the train after done something wrong. And the people were watching them. They were not beating them down. They were not kicking their booty. They were just watching them, right? And so when we got to the next stop, the nice-looking young people, very nicely dressed, all got off the train and were subdued by police. Let me tell you how they were subdued by the police. Come with me. That was subduing.
Oh, my God.
They got them off the train gently. They did not kick their behinds. They did not beat them with batons. They did not shoot them with guns. They used their personalities and their bodies to get the children off the train, and they got them off the train. Policing doesn't have to mean a death sentence. You shouldn't make a phone call about mental health and your 11-year-old is shot. That is not what it should happen. And I had so many Dr. King quotes in my sermon. You'll get that in the version that goes out on the interwebs. Thank you, Substack. Because we got to know there's more than I have a dream. There's more than I have a dream. So we can have a little King read-in, okay? Your pastor, who's a Kingian nonviolent student, is saying to you, not enough has changed. The analyses of 1968, of 1955, are the analyses of 2024. What are we going to do? Well, we're going to keep learning about race because we're going to come to the conference. We are going to keep thinking about materialism because we're going to analyze how we spend our money and what we do with it. And we are going to think about militarization because we're not going to be afraid to speak up that we're watching some bad acting happen right now. We're going to continue to call for a ceasefire. We're going to continue to ask for peace. And we're going to work on police reform with our colleagues. Those are the things I think we're. That's where we're at.
Thanks for listening, friends. To learn more about Middle Church, visit middlechurch.org. You can help grow this movement of love and justice by rating us on Apple or Spotify and by sharing this episode with a friend or two. Send us an email at info@middlechurch.org if you have any questions or comments. We hope you'll come back next week. Bye for now.